Benjamin Netanyahu refused to implement phase two of a ceasefire already agreed with Hamas. Now Israel's prime minister has resumed airstrikes on Gaza, killing hundreds of people. But can he achieve his goals through war? And what role do his domestic problems play in these renewed attacks? This is Inside Story. Hello there, I'm James Bayes. Israel has launched its biggest assault on Gaza since the 19th of January, when a ceasefire was agreed between Hamas and Israel. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed. Many more have been forced to flee homes they'd only just returned to. Israel says the strikes were ordered because of a lack of progress in the talks to extend the ceasefire. The White House has confirmed it was consulted before they would carry it out. Hamas is calling on Israel to be held responsible for violating the agreement. Why has Israel shattered the ceasefire, and how will the international community respond? We'll talk to our guests shortly, but first this report from Victoria Gatenby.
Peace in Gaza has been hanging in the balance ever since the first phase of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas ended more than 2 weeks ago. Phase two was due to begin, but Israel instead resumed its blockade, again cutting off aid and supplies to the Strip. Those talks were meant to negotiate the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza and the release of all 59 remaining captives, 24 of whom are believed to be alive. But Hamas says Israel refused to engage. Instead, it endorsed a US plan to extend the phase one ceasefire during Ramadan and the Jewish holiday of Passover. Hamas had been pushing to continue the ceasefire and said allowing Israel to abandon phase two would give it the option to resume fighting once all captives were returned. But with the backing from the US Trump administration, Israel has shattered that peace with a wave of Israeli strikes. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed, many of them women and children.
The whole world is unjust. These are all children. This is a young child, a girl. Here they are.
We were shocked when at 2:30 in the morning my mother woke up to prepare her suhoor meal. She entered the kitchen and there was a strike on our neighbor's home. His sons were killed.
In Tel Aviv, protesters worry about the fate of captives who are due to be released in the second phase of the deal. They say Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu needs the war to continue so he can stay in power.
This is no longer a war that is about something that is important. It's all about the survival of this government, the survivor of Benjamin Netanyahu.
I have no idea what is going to happen to the remaining hostages if the fighting keeps on going for the following weeks. It's an absolute disaster for us.
The public anger comes as Netanyahu announced he intends to dismiss Ronen Bar, the chief of Israel's security agency Shin Bet, because he no longer trusts him. As Israeli bombs again rain down across Gaza, more than 2 million people, whose lives have been wrecked by death, displacement and famine, are bracing for more attacks. Victoria Gatenby, Al Jazeera for Inside Story.
Before we discuss all of this with our panel of guests today, I wanted to check in with our correspondent in Gaza, Hind Hodari. Hind, thank you so much for joining us on Inside Story. I wanted to ask you how people there are reacting to this most awful news during Ramadan, that the most awful thing has happened. The war has started yet again.
People are literally terrified. They're helpless. They're devastated. And this comes after 17 days of the closure of the crossing. So people are already starving. They do not have access to food. The water desalination that was giving water for 500,000 Palestinians is not working anymore. No medicine, no fuel, no cooking gas. Palestinians are suffering to live their daily life. And do you imagine all of this happens and Palestinians wake up on massive series of attacks in different areas across the Gaza Strip? They feel very helpless, devastated. Everyone's frightened, and especially those little children who thought that Ramadan is going to finish and they're going to celebrate Eid for the first time without any airstrikes. There's no words to describe, but everyone here in Gaza today is very depressed deep down and very frightened that this is going to be another year and a half.
Hind, those of us who are watching and watch your reports and follow you on X, none of us can actually put ourselves in your shoes, but we certainly get your opinions on the situation and your analysis on the situation from your reporting. And I assume that one of the things that keeps you going in a desperate situation like you have been in for so long is the idea that there is hope that things might get better. Is there any hope left now?
Well, there was a little bit of hope, especially the fact that people went back to the Gaza City, started cleaning their houses, collecting their houses. Personally, like me as Hind, I went back home. I tried to take some stuff from under the rubble. Some places that were not operating started operating, some cafes, some restaurants. But all of this was crushed in 1 minute yesterday. At 2:30 a.m. when the Israelis decided to bomb Gaza one more again. Here in Al-Aqsa Hospital, this courtyard has been echoing the tears and screams of those who lost their beloved ones earlier this morning. There is hope, but there is no hope. We made it 470 days and there was a ceasefire. We were waiting for phase number two. But this instability and this unknown future is haunting every Palestinian. What's going to happen next? Now, it was in a blink of an eye where the Israeli forces launched this massive attack. But also, is this going to ever end? Are we going to reach the second phase and the third phase? I do not see any hope. Palestinians lost hope. We're all very helpless and we're all very devastated.
Hind Hodari in Gaza, thank you so much for joining us. Well, let's bring in our guest to discuss this further. From Ramallah, we're joined by Mustafa Barghouti, the Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative. In Dublin, we have Scott Lucas, who is Professor of US and International Politics at University College Dublin. And in London, Daniel Levy is President of the US Middle East Project and a former Israeli government advisor. Let me start with you, Mustafa, if I can. It's clear the ceasefire is over. It's Israel that's restarted the Gaza war. We heard Hind say there that there's no hope at all now in Gaza. Do you think the ceasefire is over for good, Mustafa?
The ceasefire is over because Israel violated it. And Israel has been violating the ceasefire agreement for the last 2 months continuously. If we count the number of violations that Israel did to the ceasefire, it is no less than maybe 1,200 violations, including killing 175 people before this last attack on Gaza. But most important, since 17 days and in front of the whole world, Israel put Gaza under complete and total siege, preventing any kind of humanitarian needs from reaching Gaza, including water, including food, including medications, which is by itself a war crime and a very serious violation of international law. Now they have conducted 100 airstrikes suddenly without warning, killing no less than 413 people, including 130 children, and injuring more than 600, the vast majority of whom are simply civilians. This attack is not only meant to violate the ceasefire, but to bring back the war of genocide on Gaza and to bring back the dreams about total ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian population in Gaza. So now we're back to the same square number one. Three war crimes happening in front of the world at the same time. The war crime of genocide, the war crime of collective punishment, including starving people, and the war crime of ethnic cleansing, which Israel now is threatening to conduct in the northern parts of Gaza. This is combined, by the way, with another war happening in the West Bank, with the Israeli army evicting more than 50,000 people from the refugee camps of Jenin, Nur Shams, and Tul Karim camps, and now threatening to move the war actions to Nablus city and the refugee camps in the area. This is a war on the Palestinian people, and it would not have happened in this manner if it wasn't for the complicity of the international community, if it wasn't for the fact that Trump gave Israel the green light to conduct this terrible genocidal act, and if it wasn't for the fact that Israel is allowed to have impunity and total impunity and lack of accountability to any international law or any international humanitarian law.
Okay, let me bring in Scott on that point that you make there. The White House has confirmed that they were briefed ahead of this attack. A White House spokesman, Hamas could have released hostages to extend the ceasefire, but instead chose refusal and war. This was green-lighted, was it not, by the Trump administration? That the fact they were consulted beforehand, they could have objected.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the starting point for this is that last October, when Donald Trump spoke to Benjamin Netanyahu by phone, and Netanyahu laid out the position that he was in vis-a-vis not only Israel's open-ended war in Gaza, but at that point, what was an Israeli war in Lebanon, Trump said to him, Bibi, do what you have to do. We had that brief pause just before phase one of the ceasefire, in which, in part because Donald Trump thought it would make him look good, look like a peacemaker, that he did use his envoy, Steve Witkoff, to say to Netanyahu, we would like you to go into phase one of the ceasefire. But to spell out Mustafa's excellent explanation, there was no hope we were going to get a phase two of a ceasefire. Why is that? There was no hope that the Israeli government was going to agree to phase two of a ceasefire because the hard right had told Netanyahu they would only accept phase one if there was no phase two. The Israeli government was never going to accept pulling back with a full withdrawal from the Gaza Strip. And the Israeli government were never going to accept a Gaza in which elements of Hamas remained, whether or not those elements of Hamas were in the government. We've known that. And what had happened in recent weeks is that while the violations of the ceasefire had gone on, the Israeli government effectively gave an ultimatum. And that is, well, we'll extend phase one, and we won't attack, provided you give us all the hostages back, those who are dead and those who are alive. When Hamas refused to do so and said, no, we want to talk about phase two of the agreement, Israel cut off the humanitarian assistance into the Strip, and then they carried out these attacks. In other words, this was telegraphed. We could see that this was coming, and we knew that the Trump administration effectively had given a blank check to Netanyahu to resume the attacks.
Daniel, I mean, let's just remind everyone that it was just before the inauguration, just before Trump came into office, that this ceasefire deal was agreed. And Trump took the credit, even though it was still just on Biden's watch. He said at the time, this epic ceasefire agreement. And yet now it's Netanyahu's breaking it and there's no pushback whatsoever.
Well, more than no pushback, of course, James, as we've just heard, it's been green-lighted. It was signaled in advance where normal service has been resumed, if you like. We're back to Israel breaking the terms of something that was agreed, putting something very different on the table. The Americans saying, well, let's paint that in the stars and stripes of an American package, put it to the other side. Crucial here. I really want people to pause on this for a moment. There was a framework. Trump was right to take credit because Biden could not have achieved this. Netanyahu was not sure where the new administration stood. That proposal offered a framework. America was a guarantor of that framework. That framework said second phase negotiations, third phase negotiations to get a permanent Israeli full military withdrawal and ceasefire. Netanyahu consistently said, I will not do the thing I've just agreed to. The question, therefore, was, would the US stick to the terms that it was a guarantor of, or would it shift the goalpost? And why is that so important? Because this is not the only issue on which the Trump administration is conducting negotiations. And the example from here is that when a party violates the terms it has agreed to, the US has agreed to align itself with the violation, not with its commitment as a guarantor. So I think what Netanyahu was doing, of course, he was calculating his politics, he was calculating his coalition. He has 12 days left to pass a budget or his government collapses. And of course, he's seen an immediate bounce in that respect with the Jewish Power Ben Gavir faction saying they will rejoin the government. All that stuff was predictable, but he's doing this now because he knows that now he has the backing of the Trump administration. And I think the key moment when Netanyahu really got concerned that maybe these guys will act differently, and he doubled down on his efforts to undermine this, the key moment was when we became aware of the direct talks between special hostage envoy Adam Bola and Hamas. Not only did Bola conduct those talks, but he owned the fact that those talks took place, not only in US media, but he went and did interviews across the Israeli news networks. And Bola spoke like a grown-up. Let's just acknowledge this. He did something that is so obvious diplomatically. You speak to the other side. And he said, it was important for me to understand what they wanted, what they needed, what their perspective was. And you know what? They didn't have horns going out of their head. And Bola starts talking the language of, we can do a deal, a long-term truce.
But Daniel, Bola's initiative seems to have got shut down, does it not? And Steve Witkoff, the businessman friend of Donald Trump, he's the one who is now advising the president. And we know with Donald Trump, he has strong opinions, but he's also very seriously swayed by the people who talk to him.
Precisely. And that's why we are where we are. Because for Netanyahu, one of the most crucial things, if he was going to continue to lie and deceive those in the West who were willing to believe him, the media, enough of his own public. The crucial thing was that people would not talk directly to Hamas and hear from the horse's mouth, who is really the obstacle here? I'm not saying they're easy negotiators, but they have not been the obstacle. And once people start directly engaging with Hamas, which should be the most obvious thing, the cat is out the bag. That Netanyahu is the one who is totally unreasonable, is pursuing a political and ideological agenda, which is antithetical to any kind of sustainable calm. He had to close that down. Once he knew that the administration, with all the pressure that the lobby could bring to bear, once he knew that the administration was going to disown that effort, he could go ahead and do what he did overnight, and not just overnight, but let's also look at the sensibility that was offended here, in addition to the killing of people, which is the worst part. But he did this during Sahur, the pre-Ramadan meal that people would have been taking, and he knew exactly the impact that would have. And
Mustafa,
we are back where we are.
Mustafa, you said earlier on that clearly the Israelis had broken this ceasefire a long time ago with continued strikes that went on during the so-called ceasefire, but also with the blockade that has taken place over the last few weeks. I mean, I think it's worth pointing out, is it not, that what they have done in Gaza in the last few weeks are exactly the things that the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court have called them out for. There was an order back in January the 26th, 2024, ordering the State of Israel to provide urgently needed basic services and humanitarian assistance by the International Court of Justice. And the fact that aid was not allowed into Gaza before is the first line of the arrest warrant against Prime Minister Netanyahu, allegedly responsible for the war crime of starvation.
Absolutely. And more than that, while during the war, Israel was lying to the international community, claiming that it was allowing some humanitarian aid to Gaza. In this particular incident, during the ceasefire, when they blocked everything to Gaza for 17 days, they declared that they are doing it on purpose. They didn't deny it. They didn't hide it. And why are they able to do so? Because regardless of the fact that Netanyahu has been accused officially of war crimes and accused of being a war criminal by the International Criminal Court, which demands that he should be handed over to the court to be judged about his crimes, regardless of that, the world community is not imposing any kind of sanctions on his fascist government. So because of that, because of the feeling of impunity, and also because of the lack of and the delay in the actions of the International Court of Justice, which is discussing the fact that Israel is committing genocide, Netanyahu is back to committing genocide one more time. And that all is happening for two reasons. Not only because Netanyahu wants to keep his government in place, not only because he wants to bring the fascist Ben-Gvir to his fascist government with Smotrich, and not only because he wants to save his position during in the Israeli Knesset when they discuss the Israeli budget, but more than that, in addition to all of that, Netanyahu represents a fascist ideological tendency, a fascist ideology that believes that the only solution to the problem of the Palestinian people, which are more in numbers now on the land of historic Palestine than the Jewish Israelis, that the solution is ethnic cleansing. Not two-state solution, not one-state solution, not any kind of peace, but ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. That is the essence of what's happening. And this all would not have happened if it wasn't for the failure of the international community in making Israel accountable to their crimes, accountable to international law. What we face here is not a risk for Palestine only and the Palestinian people. This is a risk for the whole world, because this level of violation of international law we haven't seen since the rise of Nazism in Germany in the Second World War.
And Scott, I mean, the suggestion of ethnic cleansing is not just a suggestion. It's coming from the most powerful man in the world, Donald Trump, and he's said it repeatedly.
That infamous Trump comment, you know, about making Riviera in the Middle East by removing the people of Gaza was not just simply a thought bubble. I mean, there was a plan which was commissioned by the Trump folks in the summer of 2024 from a professor at George Washington University who said, well, you have to start from scratch. You have to remove all the rubble, and you have to remove the people. So it was a serious thought bubble. But I think the significance of it, and this is where you have to go wider, is what did it do? First of all, it emboldened those in Israel, including those on the hard right, who have talked about moving at least half of the population of Gaza out. Now, they will try to frame this as a voluntary transfer, that this is not forced ethnic cleansing. But you can see where they're going, which is essentially, we want to depopulate the area. So that was the first effect of what Trump said. It actually emboldened people within Israel. And secondly, what it did is it moved, it reinforced this idea that the people of Gaza are not human in the way that you and I, or that Donald Trump, or that Israelis would be. It's the idea that they, in fact, have no specific existence. And so because of that, it sort of sanctions not just the possibility these people will be removed, but until the fact that they are removed, that there's no reason why they have a humanity which deserves humanitarian aid, or any security from being bombed or shelled to death.
Daniel, I mean, we're looking at war crimes and how ongoing war crimes, as we speak, could be stopped. Is it possible they could be stopped from actions taking place in the country that is committing the war crimes? Maybe not because people in Israel support the people of Gaza, but certainly there are political difficulties currently facing Netanyahu. Could those lead to a change in policy?
Well, if one takes a step back, there has not been the pressure to desist from the committing of war crimes. And of course, you've seen many individual soldiers down the chain of command taking pride, posting on their own social media accounts, now possibly culpable, the work of the Hind Rajab Foundation and others in trying to hold individuals to account for their actions as they should be, in addition to the actions taken by the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court. But what you have had, and this may get to your point, James, what you have had, and it's happening now again on the streets in Israel, is a cohort of the public saying the priority should be the hostages. And what you've had in the hours since the Israeli strike, the resumption of these genocidal actions, What you've had is the families of those still being held, some of those who were released in the last few weeks, coming out and expressing their dismay and putting the dead cat at the door of Netanyahu. And they've explicitly said he is the one who sabotaged the negotiations. He didn't go for the second phase. He is making sure that the hostages stay there by continuing the war. Netanyahu has made the calculation that he will ride this out, that the opposition domestically won't be enough. And I fear he may be making a correct calculation. What one Haaretz journalist has just written a piece saying political survival through endless war. And this is where one turns and looks at the outside. And unfortunately, as long as America is the enabler, facilitator, and direct encourager, when you're sending the weapons, you're directly complicit in this. As long as the US plays that role, one asks the question, can anyone else impact this? And the thing that has impacted it, let's just be honest about this, has been the resilience of the Palestinian people, the horrendous suffering, but at the same time, they have not moved outside of the borders. Israel has not been able to defeat the armed resistance. That is a big blow. If Netanyahu tries to call up reservists, so far he's been using the Air Force. If he tries to call up reservists, that may be another fault line inside Israel. What we see is insufficient mobilization in the region and beyond to prevent this. But we do have, for instance, this Hague group that was launched, some countries taking a bolder approach. And if the Europeans want to be taken seriously when they say, hey, actually, we do believe in international law, well, it's well past time that you should start acting. But I think this will come down to whether Israel can destroy and physically remove the Palestinians and whether it's in the West Bank or in Gaza. The reservoirs, the depths of the ability of the Palestinians to continue to show steadfastness. That shouldn't be the equation, but we're back to that place. And whether Israel, on the other hand, could continue, because Israel does not run a resistance economy. Israel does not have endless reservists that they can bring in. And I think that the exhaustion that you saw in Israeli society is, as you suggested, James, going to ultimately be one of the things that does mean this cannot go on indefinitely. I hope that's the case, at least.
Daniel, thank you very much. And thank you to all of our guests today, Mustafa Barghouti, Scott Lucas and Daniel Levy. Hind, who you saw at the start of the programme, and our brave team in Gaza continue to report for us around the clock. And you can get further analysis at our website, aljazeera.com. We always like to hear from you too. Go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. Or on X, find us at AJInsideStory. I'll be back in this chair very soon. Until then, from me, James Bayes, and the team here in Doha, stay safe. Bye-bye for now.